WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. Boy, oh boy, happy Friday. Or should I say Fri-yay? Oh, it's beautiful here in Michigan. We got through the storm, I guess you can say. Yesterday, cold, snowy, rainy, just oogle, right? But the heavens have parted because it's about 50 degrees outside. The snow is melting. Supposed to be 70 degrees come Sunday. I plan on hitting the driving range. Should be a great weekend. We plan on closing out your week with a lot of fun sports talk on this Friday afternoon, all the way up until 2 p.m. On today's Current Sports, it is opening day for the Detroit Tigers. How about that? I know some of the homies back in the D that actually camped out starting at 5:30 a.m. this morning outside of Comerica Park. A lot of folks soaking it in right now as the Detroit Tigers will open up the home season against the Boston Red Sox in exactly 9 minutes. We will chat about opening day, that tradition, a tradition unlike any other in the city of Detroit. Also, a historic moment that will take place this weekend. A bittersweet one, a sad one. Seeing as though the Detroit Red Wings will bid the Joe farewell. That's right, Joe Louis Arena will no longer be the home of the Winged Will, seeing as though the Wings will be moving to Little Caesars Arena along with the Detroit Pistons next season. We will invite to the show Richard Kincaid, our dear friend and Detroit sports broadcaster, hockey aficionado. He will join us on the air to share some of his memories of the Joe and to talk about what that historic venue means to the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. Throughout this hour, I want to hear your thoughts on the Joe. For those that attended a game there, for those that are Red Wings fans, what do you make of this season, and what do you make of the Red Wings making this move? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. So there will be a ton of nostalgia on today's Current Sports. And for the first time in quite some time, the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Pistons will not be playing in the postseason. The first time this has happened in a while, the first time during my 26 years on this planet we call Earth that I have not seen at least the Wings or the Pistons make the playoffs. Such an odd year. The Pistons mathematically eliminated from postseason contention last night. Also, we will finally get to this debate. Dennis Rodman, former teammate of the GOAT, Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Dennis had some strong comments concerning today's NBA players, and one player in particular, the best player on the planet, that being LeBron James, resting during the NBA season. We'll chat about that. And, of course, it's Friday. We will take a look back at the week that has been here on WKAR's Current Sports and highlight some of our favorite interviews, segments, and maybe a few stories that we did not get a chance to chat about. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can go to Facebook.com/Current Sports, where we are currently live streaming the show. You can also weigh in there, shoot us a comment. I will read it live here on our airwaves, or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. Hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with an update concerning the Dr. Larry Nassar case. Former Michigan State Dr. Larry Nassar's medical license has been revoked for 3 years, and he must pay $100,000 before reapplying, a spokesman for the Department of Licensing for Regulatory Affairs said. Nassar is now accused of deleting computer files and trashing his hard drives. Now, these come in addition to charges of sexual abuse and child pornography. The new count was in an indictment filed in federal court in Michigan, where Nassar is being held without bail. More than 90 women and girls have filed lawsuits against Michigan State University, USA Gymnastics, and Nassar. Moving along, the Lansing Lugnuts, were set to have their season opener on Thursday, but due to April showers, or in our case, April snowstorms, the game was postponed due to the field conditions. The game, however, will be made up today in a doubleheader. The Luggies will play 2 7-inning games separated by a 30-minute break. The first game set to begin at 4 p.m. And how about this? This story had me smiling a bit. In his debut with the Class A Columbia Fireflies, ex-NFL QB Tim Tebow blasted a home run in his first at-bat. Initially, Tebow thought he only hit a ground rule double, but he heard the field ump say, "Keep on going, brother." Tebow had this to say about his big moment, quote, "All of my sports experiences helped me for moments like that, playing in the Swamp or Death Valley or in Mile High Stadium in the playoffs. They all helped. So much about sports is handling moments and handling pressure," end quote. Despite the home run, Tebow finished the day going 1 of 5 with 2 RBIs. He also struck out his last 3 at-bats. And I must say this, though, even though Tim Tebow did smack a home run in his first at-bat with the Fireflies, cool name, it came against the 660th pick in the 2015 MLB draft. So take that for what it's worth, all right? Congrats to Tebow, though. All right, the Detroit Tigers opened up the Major League season on the road facing the Chicago White Sox. Of the 4 games that were scheduled to take place, 2 were postponed due to the, of course, weather. Now, and they walked away with 1 win and 1 loss, .500 on the year with clear skies today. The Tigers will have their home opener against the Boston Red Sox. Rookie of the year from last year, Michael Fulmer, will be the starter on the mound today for the Tigers. The game will begin in about 3 minutes at 1:10 p.m., and fans can watch the action on Fox Sports Detroit. Please do so, though, while still listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, we'll keep you updated on the score as the hour proceeds. All right, in their last 8 games, the Pistons have lost 7 games and only won 1. With a stat like that, it's no surprise that they have now been officially eliminated from making the playoffs. On Wednesday against the Toronto Raptors, the Pistons had a 10-point lead at the half mark of the game. At one point in the first half, the Pistons did lead by 20 points, somehow managed to lose that lead and give up nearly 40 points in the fourth stanza. Now, the team has some important decisions to make regarding key players on the team. Reggie Jackson, along with Andre Drummond, 2 guys who are considered to be the stars. Well, they're certainly not playing like stars. It was announced earlier today that Reggie Jackson will sit out the remaining 4 games to, quote, clear his head. The former linebacker of the Detroit Pistons, DeAndre Levy, was sidelined the majority of last season. Now, in the home opener, Levy tore his meniscus, which put him out for the next 3 months. Levy returned to action for the last 5 games of the year, but he now says that he was not even close to 100% healthy when he did make that comeback. Now, after another surgery recently to repair more damage on the same knee, Levy sent an email to ESPN that read, quote, "I still had the same issues emerge in March as from December and January. Turns out there was a little more damage than I was being told, and there's no way I should have been back on the field last year," end quote. Bad medical advice, Levy. Bad medical advice. All right. The Masters, of course, kicked off yesterday with a surprise when tournament favorite Dustin Johnson walked off the first tee box yesterday. World number 1, folks. Johnson injured his back, as we highlighted, when he fell down a set of stairs on Wednesday at his rental home. Johnson had won each of his last 3 PGA starts coming into the Masters. Charlie Hoffman ended the first round with a 4-shot lead over William McGirt. Get this, Hoffman shot a 65 on Thursday. It was one of the most incredible round ones I have ever seen, especially when you consider the atrocious wind conditions that took place at Augusta National yesterday. Wow. Hoffman, his 4-stroke lead is the largest at the Masters after 18 holes all the way back since 1955. That's a long time. World number 2, Rory McIlroy,
number three, Jason Day, were perceived as the front runners after Johnson's exit. However, both players struggled through much of the first round, with McIlroy shooting 72 and Day closing at 74. And last but certainly not least, they are pretty good to say the least, folks. The United States women's hockey team will play Canada in the gold medal game of the Women's World Championships. 10 different goal scorers and 13 different players combined to send the United States past Germany with an 11-0 win in the semifinals. The United States is currently ranked numero uno in women's hockey. Canada won its semifinal game against Finland 4-0. The Canadian team is playing to reassert its place at the top of international hockey, although Canada has won 4 of the 5 Olympic gold medals in women's ice hockey. It has lost 7 of the last 9 world championships to, yeah, you guessed it, the Americans, including the last 3. You can watch that game tonight, 7:30 p.m. at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, Michigan. Not too far from here in mid-Michigan, folks. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. A lot on the slate today. Tigers opening day, that game just getting underway against the Boston Red Sox at Comerica Park. The Detroit Pistons officially eliminated from the playoffs. What are your thoughts on Dennis Rodman taking a jab at LeBron James and other players for resting in today's modern world of the National Basketball Association? And again, we want to hear your memories on Joe Louis Arena. We will say goodbye to the Joe for one last time this weekend. What are your memories? 517-355-WKAR. In fact, let's start the conversation concerning the Joe. Here we go.
Sure, take the offside.
The goal credited to Lindros from Desjardins in 1945. Red Wings trying to get the sweep. 3 seconds left. Into the zone. And the top Edwards and a Stanley Cup. 2 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman to present the Conn Smythe Trophy to the 1997 Stanley Cup Playoffs Most Valuable Player.
The most valuable player, the winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy, Mike Vernon. One current player has been captain of his team longer than any other NHL player today. It's my pleasure to present the Stanley Cup to Steve Yzerman.
just glad you came my way. It's not easy to say goodbye.
Oh, boy. Did you shed a tear there? Oh, boy. I just got done blowing my nose, Isaac.
I saw.
My eyes are watery. That's the famous Lionel Richie singing one of his acclaimed tracks, Goodbye, intermixed with, of course, what I believe to be probably the top moment at Joe Louis Arena. We will all say goodbye to the Joe. Hard to believe. This Sunday, as the Wings wrap up the regular season, they will miss the playoffs. Again, the first time since 1983 that the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Pistons will both miss the playoffs. I have not seen a year here on this great planet we call Earth that I haven't seen the Pistons or the Wings make the playoffs. Again, this is the first time since 1990. I was born in 1990. The first time since then that the Wings won't make the postseason. So it's going to be a sad affair on Sunday when the Wings host the New Jersey Devils, the final game at Joe Louis Arena. I want to know your thoughts. I want to know what is your favorite memory at the Joe. And I am so ashamed to say this. Gosh, I'm beating myself up right now just thinking about it. But I have never been inside of the Joe. I know. That's a crime, right? That's a crime. Never seen a Red Wings game in person at the Joe. And with now just two games remaining, tomorrow the Wings will play the Montreal Canadiens before that final game at the Joe against the Devils. I'm running out of opportunities now. And I looked at the tickets on StubHub for that New Jersey Devils games. I look at some tickets on there, and it's like, the cheapest ticket is near like $200. I'm not paying $200 to go watch the Detroit Red Wings, a team that's going to miss the playoffs. Come on, man. So I'm a bit ashamed to say I've never been to the Joe. I've stood outside of the Joe. I've driven past it. But you know where I'm from, you know, we're not big hockey fans. So can you really blame me? It's still sad, though, I know. But in just a moment, we are going to invite a man to the show who knows all about the Detroit Red Wings. He has covered and attended as a fan many games at the Joe, that being our dear friend Richard Kincaid. You do not want to miss that. Detroit sports broadcaster. Don't miss that interview, folks. Richard is filled with a wealth of knowledge in multiple areas of the sporting world. And it's opening day for the Detroit Tigers. This weekend is going to be buzzing downtown Detroit. It already is. Pretty good weather today. A bit chilly, even though, you know, I was looking at the forecast for Detroit. Right now, the temperature will hover near 50 degrees, but with the high winds, it will feel at times like it's in the 30s at Comerica Park. So I'm looking at a few pictures online from those that I know who are currently at Comerica Park, and they are bundled up. I mean, layers on top of layers. I've seen scarves and scullies, gloves. People came prepared. And since about 5 o'clock this morning, people have been lined up waiting to celebrate opening day. It is certainly a religion in the city of Detroit. It really is. So much so that, get this, I found this story to be pretty funny as well. Wayne County Circuit Court officials gave a break to those slated to appear for jury duty today. Quote, due to the inconvenience of parking, end quote, as thousands flood downtown, jurors set to report at Frank Murphy Hall of Justice have now been rescheduled to appear on Monday. How about that? I'm pretty sure some of those in the legal system in the D probably wanted a day off to attend opening day as well. There's a lot of folks playing hooky in the state of Michigan right now, okay? And, you know, speaking of the weather, Dakota's day at opening day at Comerica Park was actually back in 2000 when temperatures dipped to 39 degrees. This could break that record due to the wind chill. And that was the first game that the Tigers played at Comerica Park. The first game and the coldest opening day in Comerica Park's history, I should say. The Tigers ended up beating the Seattle Mariners then 5-2. Interesting, though, because the Tigers are coming off an ugly loss against the Chi Sox yesterday. And this is the complaint I've had about the Tigers even before we really get into the crux of the season. You know, you're only as good as your starting pitching is. And you're also only as good as your relief pitching is as well. Pitching is everything in the sport of baseball. Matt Boyd got the start yesterday and did not last long. Boyd lasted 2 1/3 innings of work. He gave up 5 runs throughout that period of time and also a home run. Boyd walked 4 and also struggled with his command throughout that brief stretch. And then what happens? Okay, Brad Ausmus, who, by the way, and I failed to make this statement at the beginning of the week when discussing the season opener for the Detroit Tigers. When it comes to Brad Ausmus, let's be real. This is do or die for him. If Brad cannot get this team to the playoffs this year, he is for sure done. This is do or die for him, and he's certainly feeling the pressure, feeling the heat. But anyway, you know, Brad Ausmus, he made a comment after that 11-2 loss, and he stated that, okay, when Boyd left that game and we brought in Anibal Sanchez, who, by the way, the Tigers are paying $16 million, totally overpaying for Sanchi. Anyway, when they brought in Anibal Sanchez, Brad Ausmus said that basically his team wanted to tread water and just get through a few innings to see if they can put some runs on the board to make this thing competitive. Well, Anibal just made the situation worse when he came in. He lasted just 2 2/3 innings, pretty similar to the start of Matt Boyd, gave up 5 runs and a homer, just like Matt Boyd. Things spiraled out of control. Even Matt Davidson had a homer, folks. This is a dude who has not smacked a home run since 2013. He hit a 3-run shot off of Sanchez. That can't happen. In 2014, you know, you look at Sanchez. He gave up, 0.3 home runs per 9 innings? Pretty good. But last season, yeah, you saw the bad Sanchez. He gave up 1.8 homers per 9 innings. That is not great. They are tremendously overpaying Anibal Sanchez, but riddle me that, folks. So today, you will see on the mound opening day at Comerica Park for the Detroit Tigers as the Tigers host the Boston Red Sox, the rookie of the year, Michael Fulmer, taking on Stephen Wright this afternoon. We'll see if the Detroit Tigers can right the ship. Pun intended there. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Top of the first again, 0-0. That game just got underway literally minutes ago. 1:10, first pitch. And, you know, Isaac, I want to invite you to the show real briefly here because after the first break, we're really going to dive into this whole Dennis Rodman and LeBron James and Michael Jordan discussion, which I know you're foaming at the mouth behind the glass to get to. It's really quite simple for me when it comes to that combo. We'll get to that in just a moment. But when you look at the Detroit Tigers home opener, I'm curious, dude, have you been to a Tigers game? And have you been to a Red Wings game since you have been I guess you could say lived in Michigan since you've attended Michigan State University here? Because I feel so bad. I have never been to the Joe.
Unfortunately, I beat you on that score for Red Wings. I actually went to a game, sat in the upper sections, but it's very much like the University of Michigan Stadium. My friend told me, I asked him, you know, how many people does this seat? And he said 20,000. I did not believe him for a second. I had to look it up. I had to go to multiple places because the Joe is that seating which is just straight up and down. It goes out horizontally, and there are no luxury boxes or anything like that interrupting the seating. So there's no upper deck and there's no lower bowl. It's just one large viewing theater. And it was a great experience, except for the game, because typical of the Red Wings this season, they started off good against the Phoenix Coyotes, gave up a goal in their own power play and then proceed to lose 5-2, if I'm not mistaken. So, fun game, except for the score and the actual game itself. But on the note of the Tigers, I've actually been to a few games, and I love Comerica.
I do, too.
By far, one of my favorite parks that I've been to in the U.S. I did go to Wrigley when I was younger, but almost too young to remember it. Went to Fenway, which...
Oh, sorry, that's
Detroit.
Historic.
Yeah, sorry, Detroit. Oh, you're not being that one
no.
out. Fenway is the best park I've been to, bar none.
In but, sports, period?
Yeah,
I hear that a lot. I mean, Fenway has so much history. It's, you know, when you walk in, I mean, it's like a sea when you walk into that stadium, I've heard. It's on my bucket list for sure.
But the Tigers' atmosphere really pales in comparison to few, just because it's... such an atmosphere where you walk in and there's a flood of people. That's how I describe it. It's all these people just converging at this one place, this one mecca. And of course, that's Comerica Park. Absolutely beautiful venue. And the Tigers are good enough. So unlike the Red Wings this year, it could actually make for a couple of decent games.
You know, I was doing some research and I know that New Orleans does not have a Major League Baseball team, but you guys do have probably the coolest minor league name for a team that I've ever heard of in my life. The New Orleans Baby Cakes? Is that accurate?
It is accurate.
Dude, I looked up this last night because I always do my prep the night before, and I went to the New Orleans the New Orleans Baby Cakes website. I kid you not, that's the real name of this minor league team. It's actually the website, if you want to check it out, is cakesbaseball.com, the official site of the New Orleans Baby Cakes. And I went, and that is one scary mascot, dude. You know, because, you know, it's funny. I didn't know about the whole tradition when it comes to Mardi Gras and the king cake, and you eat the king cake, and whoever, you know, bites into the cake and gets a small, and I do mean small, a really small baby. What's that supposed to symbolize again? I always forget what it symbolizes.
I think it got lost in the process.
It's just like,
I really couldn't tell you off the bat.
There.
I mean, it's baby Jesus, I believe, because it's King Cake starts selling right after All Saints Day. But
you can look at this mascot, dude. It's like a baby who's really angry with like these evil eyes, these evil green eyes, and he's like holding a purple baseball bat in the middle of what looks like a king cake color-schemed donut. It is so weird, but so cool at the same time.
It's
Nola,
a troubling
only
baby.
Nola.
It's a troubling baby. It really is. And it's a troubled baby. I feel bad for it. But the thing is, when that name was brought to us, none of us knew what to think. At first, we were all shocked. I think that's a fair emotion. But some people loved it, and I'm in that category. And some people hated it, and I'm also in that category. Because when I heard the name, it was done by some Oakland PR firm. And all of us wondered, what the heck is a baby cake? Mm-hmm. It's a king cake baby. Yes, we know what that is. But a baby cake is something else entirely. But whatever, they conflated the two names. They got this out of it.
Oh.
And at the end of the day, it's weird enough so that it might just work. For
it's
minor
so
league
weird,
baseball,
it's cool. It's
you
so
need a
weird.
Gimmick.
Yeah, you need a gimmick for minor league. I mean, like the Lugnuts. I remember when I first moved to Lansing as a student here at Michigan State University, I said, the Lugnuts? What kind of name is that? But that's the essence of minor league baseball, folks. So very cool stuff, though. That certainly tickled me when I was doing research for today's show. Also, again, I want to talk about the Detroit Pistons. Just really, and I do mean really, really briefly here. The Pistons are mathematically eliminated from the NBA playoffs. With wins by the Indiana Pacers and the Chicago Bulls, the Pistons got eliminated from playoff contention last night. This will be the seventh time in 8 seasons that the Pistons will miss the playoffs. They will be in the NBA draft lottery on May 16th, crossing their fingers. Currently, right now, via ESPN, ESPN NBA draft analyst Chad Ford has the Pistons currently as the number 11 overall pick when the draft ensues on June 22nd. And Chad Ford actually has the Pistons taking Gonzaga freshman big man Zach Collins, saying, quote, Collins proved He's worthy of a lottery pick with a dominant 14-point, 13-board, 6-block performance coming off the bench for the Zags in the Final Four versus South Carolina. Then he goes on to back up that claim further. The Pistons, you know, at pick number 11, the Pistons would have a 0.8% chance of winning the number one pick in the lottery and a 2.9% chance to jump into the top three. And as I mentioned during the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, SVG has decided to shut down Reggie Jackson for the remaining four games of the season. He sees no reason why to play Reggie, because right now Reggie Jackson, I mean, when you look at it, all signs point to Reggie not being a part of this team next year. You put him on the market, see what you can get for him. Unfortunately, before the NBA trade deadline, the Pistons did try to do that. There were just no takers. And I think that's a telling sign as to the value of Reggie Jackson. Look, Reggie is a catch-22 for me, because I thought when he first got to the Detroit Pistons, he was playing great. Awesome. He was finding that balance between being a pass-first point guard and really picking and choosing when to score. He got injured. Not his fault, but he got injured, came back, and never meshed with this team, mostly in part due to him just jacking up shots left and right and trying to force his way back into the flow of the Detroit Pistons. On multiple occasions, Ish Smith became that guy. He actually, as the year went on, Ish Smith began starting over Reggie Jackson and was more productive than Reggie Jackson. Now, don't get me wrong, I like Ish Smith, but the Pistons aren't going to win or compete for NBA championships with Ish Smith as the guy at point guard. I like Ish, but no, not going to happen. And I think Andre Drummond, it's a question of effort with him. When Andre Drummond is in tune with the game effort-wise, watch out. There need to be major changes made. I would not be against the Pistons shipping out Andre Drummond and seeing what they could get for him. He may be the most high-value guy on the roster if you want to get a big name to come to the team, and they need to make sure that they get somebody who can come in immediately and play efficient minutes come this NBA draft lottery. A lot of questions, though. I think you give Stan Van Gundy one more year. One more year, because I do think this dude is a great basketball mind. I think to a certain degree the team may have tuned him out as the year went along, but give him one more year just to see what can happen, because, again, you cannot blame everything that went wrong with the Pistons this year solely on the backs and shoulder of Stan Van Gundy. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with Richard Kincaid, again, Detroit sports broadcaster. He will share his thoughts on the final game at the Joe, and we will also chat about Dennis Rodman making a few comments concerning LeBron James resting throughout the regular season in comparison to the GOAT Michael Jordan. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
You know what, LeBron's doing one thing that I always said that Michael Jordan never did. Never rested. He played every game. He played every game. LeBron has the position to do this now because they need him. The league needs him. That's why he's doing all this crazy now. Like, you know, and complaining and all this raving. I mean, see what I'm saying? But it's like, it's very easy to do what they define greatness. Michael Jordan did it when it was tough, really tough. And what did he do? Lead the league and score 10 years in a row? 10 years in a row, he led the league and scored 10 years in a row. Back then, that was hard. That was like 32 points a game. That was hard back then. Now it's easy. You know, all this trouble, I don't even that, but I'm saying, I mean, beat down every game. And then when he played against us, he said, guess what? I can't go back in the gym. And he got tough. He got great and greater.
So that's it. Dennis Rodman. commenting with CBS Sports. Actually, a long sit-down. I didn't realize how long that sit-down was that he did with CBS Sports not too long ago. I believe that was this week, chatting about multiple areas concerning his playing career and post his playing career, giving his thoughts on today's NBA. Dennis Rodman commented on LeBron James and the whole situation going on in today's National Basketball Association, in which players are resting games, coaches are sitting out superstars on nationally televised sporting events in the NBA, and a lot of fans aren't happy with it. Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, he wants to make some changes that will not allow coaches to do that. Now, when it comes to the whole LeBron James and Michael Jordan comparison, again, we've had this debate multiple times on the show. Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And in comparison to LeBron James, which I don't even know why we have this comparison today, because in my view, that ship is long sailed. But when you make this comparison with, like, Dennis Rodman made, there's a few things you have to take in consideration here. First off, I hate comparing eras because, again, it's so tough to do. However, there are a few direct lines and conclusions that you can draw when making certain comparisons to certain NBA eras. I agree with Dennis Rodman when he said that it is tougher. It was tougher, I should say, back in the day to average knocking on the door of 30 points per game because the way that officiating is today in today's modern NBA. It's catered to the offensive player. We've made that known countless times here on the show. And let's not forget, though, that Michael Jordan did take a sabbatical of some sorts after 9 seasons. He did not play in the 1993-94 year, instead becoming a minor league baseball player, and returned to basketball with 17 games left in that 1994-95 regular season. When you look at Michael Jordan's, really the nooks and crannies of his career during 1985-86 season, Jordan missed 64 games due to a broken foot when he entered the league. 1988-89, he missed just one game. 91-92, two games. 92-93, four games. Again, 94-95, the Bulls played 67 games without him, and he did not join the team until March 19th. He did play all 17 games that he was eligible to play during that time, and we all know how that season ended. Jordan got the ball stolen by him in the playoffs. A lot of people forget about that year. It's like amnesia, right? But, you know, Jordan got the ball stolen from him against Shaquille O'Neal's Orlando Magic, and the Bulls went out early in the playoffs that season. And if you look at from there, I'll even go early 2000s on you. In 01-02, he played 60 of a possible 82 games with the Washington Wizards. At that time, you know, Jordan was in his 40s. So that's admirable regardless. Now, Jordan did, in fact, lead the league in scoring 10 years in a row, as long as you disregard the 94-95 year and also 95-96 seasons when he was retired and partially retired. And you look at it is the issue here when making this whole, you know, when engaging in this dialogue between LeBron James resting and Michael Jordan not and blah blah blah, the issue that I have with this conversation is not that LeBron is sitting out, it's why he's sitting out. It's for quote unquote rest, and that's the issue that I have with today's NBA stars. Not just LeBron James here, but we're seeing it across the line here when it comes to superstars in today's National Basketball Association. Back in the day, you did not hear NBA players saying, I need to rest, and sitting out on nationally televised games. It's a new era. It's a new age. It's a different player here in 2017 than it was back in the 90s and the 80s and so on and so forth, in which I believe was even a more physical game. Total regular season games played, when you look at it, Michael Jordan played 1,072 games. He also played 179 playoff games. He never missed a postseason game. And right now, this is why LeBron James is resting. And I kind of, in a way, give LeBron a hall pass, because LeBron is all about legacy at this point. LeBron James, we all know LeBron James, when you discuss the L word, legacy, he's one of the most sensitive dudes in the game, right? And deservedly so, because LeBron James is trying to chase that greatest of all time status again. a ship in which I believe has already sailed. But I get LeBron's mindset here. LeBron James is resting because he knows that in his eyes, he is chasing what he calls the ghost of Michael Jordan. All that's going to matter in LeBron's eyes when it's all said and done and to the masses is how many rings he has once he retires, okay? And he wants his body to be in tip-top shape come playoff time so that there is no reason or no excuse as to why his body broke down possibly at one point in the playoffs. He wants to be as close to 100% as possible. Heck, the Cleveland Cavaliers, I read this article not too long ago, the Cavaliers aren't even practicing anymore. So on many nights, heck, every night from here on out, I believe the Cavs, you know, and LeBron James are basically using the games as practice just to get leverage on those legs, right? Now, this is a wider conversation here because you are talking about the economics of the NBA when having this discussion of rest. You are cheating the fans when stars rest on national television, and that is the problem that I have. And that's why when you look at Michael Jordan, I always go back to a quote that he had during his Airtime documentary in which he was profiling when he came back from baseball and putting miles and miles on his body and hitting the weight room and doing things that he had never done previously in his NBA career. And he felt like he had to go out there and perform each and every night, no matter who his team was playing. They could be playing the Milwaukee Bucks at the time. Michael felt like he had, quote, an obligation to the fans and to the game, end quote, to go out there and give it all he had every single night. It did not matter if it was game 47, game 82, or game 7, which he did not even play in a game 7 during the NBA Finals. It did not matter what game it was. Mike felt an obligation being the number one ambassador for the league. When it comes to this whole situation with resting players, I'm fed up with it. Adam Silver is fed up with it, and he wants it to end. But it's the thing I always think about. Talk about coaches like Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich and company, right? I don't know if the coaches are ever going to allow Adam Silver to tell them how they should play their respective rotations. That's tough because at the end of the day, coaches are going to do what they want to do. Right? Heck, and I think Greg Popovich is so stubborn that he may bite the bullet on multiple nights, seeing as though it is all in his eyes about winning championships. Simple as that. And even in further thought about this conversation, I believe that Adam Silver may be getting pressure, not just from the fans here, but even more so from television networks. I mean, I watched a game the other day, this past weekend, actually, where I listened to Lisa Salter and Mike Breen completely bashed the league when it comes to resting superstars. They did not mince words when having that conversation on national TV because they know it's about television ratings for them. And when you rest stars, people are going to tune out. You know, I don't want to watch a Cleveland Cavaliers game during the regular season at that if LeBron James or Kyrie Irving isn't playing. It's boring. I'd rather do other stuff. I'd rather go to the gym. You know, I wait for the playoffs. And that is hurting ratings in the market. And you better believe that TV networks who have invested so much money into the NBA, actually due to television networks, the last 10 years for the NBA have been more economically profitable than the National Football League. When you start hurting those television ratings and when ESPN starts looking at the ratings for a product that they have invested heavily in and a reason why a lot of these NBA contracts have ballooned over the years, you better believe that the networks are going to be ticked off and they are going to go directly to Adam Silver to try and resolve this situation. So it's a lot of layers to this convo, Isaac. As you see, you thought I was just going to go strictly the economic route. Well, strictly the comparison route between Jordan and LeBron. You know how I feel about that. But I wanted to go deeper into diving into why these superstars are resting. There's a reason behind it, whether or not I agree with it or not.
I think it was an eloquent argument. I think you managed to correctly address most sides of the coin when it comes to this. I think you did throw a few slip knots in there, such as the ship has sailed. It has not, plain and simple. And the thing is, Al, this is as simple, as plain and easy in front of your eyes as stats. And I'm not talking about advanced stats, because advanced stats lie. We all know that. Regular stats lie. One thing that doesn't lie, never lies. Father Time. Plain and simple, Father Time is always right. Michael Jordan and LeBron James, at the same time in their career, I'm just going to read you the numbers. You don't have to respond. They're pretty conclusive. At this point in their careers, this age, LeBron James has played 41,184 minutes. Michael Jordan, he played 29,000 now, or 29,600. 12,000 more for LeBron. By far the greatest load on a player's back that has ever, ever, ever been demanded, possibly in any sport. This is the type of thing that runs players into exhaustion. This is the type of thing that runs horses in the Triple Crown race to exhaustion. Nobody plays like LeBron plays when it comes to night in, night out, year after year, from the age of 18, every single season, without the year-long sabbatical, which I like that analogy, but at the same time, Michael Jordan was resting, let's be real. Mm-hmm. He rested 3 years after that, too, when he retired for the second time in his career. Then you come back, because you can say, well, Michael Jordan was playing some college ball. He was, and that's true. I mean, when you compare that, it equalizes the debate a little
bit. My next point.
But
LeBron went straight from high school
to the
league.
Here's the answer. Even through the same amount of seasons, LeBron has played 41,184 minutes. Like I said, Michael Jordan, 37,980. Again, still 4,000 more minutes for LeBron. I know we're short on time here, but the thing is, time favors LeBron. And when you play this much, when you don't have injuries, you deserve a little bit of rest in an average regular season game. I agree with you when it's a regular season game. Yes, fans deserve to have the highest product placed in front of them. But at the same time, when it comes to the players, it would be stupid, stupid not to rest a player at this point after seeing the Warriors collapse last year based off fatigue for chasing a stupid record for the fans' enjoyment.
Isaac, if you want to play the minutes game here, I can do that all day, because when you look at the minutes played in the NBA, there are players such as Karl Malone, who logged 54,850 minutes throughout his career. Heck, Kevin Garnett, 50,418. Jay Kidd, 50,111. There are about 25 players that have played more minutes than LeBron James in their respective careers.
And LeBron is set to surpass all of them.
Who did not complain about minutes or resting, did not complain. That's the problem I hear.
Two things,
though. The fact that LeBron talks about resting, you didn't hear these other superstars saying, I need a day off or I need to rest.
Al, for one,
get out of here with
that, dude. Jordan versus LeBron. For the other, LeBron is 32 years old. Jason Kidd played till he was 40.
I hear
you. Karl Malone did the same.
I hear you, Isaac.
8 years,
well, sure,
LeBron
really,
James
we
beats
really
him
have
by
to sit the second
20,000.
Break. We really got to hit the second break. But there are way more players in the NBA who play more minutes right now than LeBron James that did not complain over needing rest. And that is my point. It's a change in culture. It's just a culture shift. Let's hit our second break. We really got to get to Richard Kincaid. You know Rich can talk, dude. We'll end the show with Richard Kincaid. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have just 10 minutes left in the show. A quick update on the Detroit Tigers' home opener against the Boston Red Sox. The Tigers have a 1-0 lead. Victor Martinez hit a sack fly that scored Ian Kinsler. 1-0 there, and we are in the bottom of the second inning. Also at the Masters, Charlie Hoffman is 4-under leading the field. Sergio Garcia in second place, 3-under, 2-under for the day, and William McGirt is at 2-under for a total when he has finished up his round. So there's a quick update on what's happening with the Detroit Tigers and Boston Red Sox and at the Masters. Right now, we want to get to a brief convo with our dear friend, Detroit sports broadcaster Richard Kincaid, to comment on the final game at the Joe that will be taking place this weekend. Rich, how you doing, my man?
Well, pretty good, except the Tigers had runners on first and second. Nobody out. That means Cabrera up. and they wind up getting one run out of it. So you think that's a bit of a waste, right?
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
This Hoffman at the Masters, he made five bogeys in a six-hole stretch. And he steadied himself, but he was faltering. But that's not what we wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, and I see Charlie Hoffman is, +3 on the day through 13
now. Yeah, he rallied a little bit after his rough stretch there.
So. Right. How about that? All right, Rich, I want you to give just your thoughts and memories as, again, we say goodbye to the Joe this weekend. I'm pretty sure you've been to multiple games at Joe Louis Arena. What is your favorite memory? I'm curious.
Don't have any.
Don't have one. Really?
I'll tell you, Al, I was there credentialed covering the night that place opened.
Right.
Back in December of 1979, and I guess it had been the week before there was the final game at Olympia Stadium, and that turned out, by the way, to be a heck of a game. The Wings fell behind to the Quebec Nordiques 4-0 and then rallied for a 4-4 tie. Mm-hmm. You know who the coach of Quebec was that night?
Who
was
that?
It was Jacques Demers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So just a little interesting sidebar. But the atmosphere, and I'm just going to sound like a, old crotchety guy, but I guess that's what I am now. The atmosphere at Olympia was just amazing. I mean, we could get that place to rock. Mm-hmm. And then to go to the Joe Louis Arena, which just struck me as a poured concrete, no personality whatsoever bowl, mm-hmm. and to be sitting, they didn't build a press box. They forgot. So they took out the last couple of rows of seats and put us up there. And it just didn't really strike me as really having any personality. We were so far away from the ice. What strikes me as funny now, as they build these new arenas, these new generation of arenas, is that people will come to the Joe Louis and say, gosh, we're so close to the ice, when my perspective is we were twice as far away from the ice as we were at Olympia Stadium. So I never really cared for the place, all those steps that you have to go up to, and mind you, I some of the best moments of my career were spent there. For several seasons, I was the radio host of Red Wings hockey, the pregame, the postgame, the intermission stuff. So I mean, I've had a lot of nights there, and I've got a lot of memories. But I'm actually not really going to be sad to see the place go.
Yeah, it looks like you're looking forward to Little Caesars Arena, and I hear that a lot when concerning the Joe. I mean, the smell of it, and I've heard the stairs complaint multiple times. It's got a lot of tradition and a lot of history because there were many great seasons spent at the Joe. But as far as a venue goes, looking forward to Little Caesars Arena, right?
I was at the place that replaced Maple Leaf Gardens, the Air Canada Center, mm-hmm. and I was just amazed when I was there. I was prepared to hate it because after they closed Olympia, my wife and I would go to Toronto once a year so I could see a hockey game in what I would call a real building, a real hockey environment.
Right.
And when I was at the Air Canada Center, I can't quite put my finger on why it was, but it retained some of the feel architecturally of Maple Leaf Gardens. And so that made me feel good, and I just thought it was a remarkable place. And if they can do that with the new arena here in Detroit, I'm all for it. I think that that would be just terrific. And I don't want people to think that my perspective here is because I didn't like our seats at Joe Louis Arena. Believe me, I'm grateful just to be in the building, just to have an opportunity to do this job, this kind of work. But I'm looking forward to the new place. It just never really caught up. But when I go back to memories about Joe Louis, I'm going to remember when I was doing the Red Wings pregame show. My broadcast location was directly across the hall from the Red Wings dressing room, and there were several nights like this. Scotty Bowman, I would wait for the team to take the ice, so I wouldn't get caught in the middle of a traffic jam and get run over by 18 hockey players, mm-hmm. led by a goalie. And then I'd be waiting in the doorway for them to pass, and then I'd go upstairs, or maybe down to the Zamboni end to watch the game from ice level, standing next to Johnny Wilson. And what an education that was. Johnny Wilson, a former great Red Wing and NHLer and head hockey coach at Princeton. But at any rate, Scotty Bowman, it was not unusual for him to take me aside. One night he goes, Rick, come with me. And he walks down the hallway, and they had the names of all the Red Wing Hall of Famers painted on the wall. And Scotty says, what's wrong with this display? And I look at it, I said, geez, I can't think of anything, Scotty. He goes, well, do you see my name there? And I kind of laughed. And then Scotty goes, here's what you do. You take this guy and you move him here and you move this guy here and then you put my name here and everything's all fixed. Why wouldn't you do that, Rick? And I said, Scotty, the game is starting, which
right.
It literally was.
Oh, wow.
And this happened on multiple occasions. He had something on his mind he wanted to talk to me about, and I would have to remind him, look, you know, you need to be, you know, on the bench because, well, that's your job.
Right.
But my famous Scotty Bowman story actually didn't happen at Joe Louis Arena, but he had the guys were on the ice, and a shift in hockey, you're supposed to go as hard as you can for, 45 seconds to a minute, and then a new line comes out. Mm-hmm. Well, these guys are out there giving it their all, and Scotty has neglected to change his line, and the guys on the ice are getting gassed. And somebody on the bench says, you know, there's several people on the bench, Scotty, you got to change the lines. You know, what are you doing, for crying out loud? And Scotty goes, oh, sorry, guys, I was looking at the scoreboard. And somebody on the bench goes, Scotty, it's just lights. You know, so.
Exactly. That so, is. For, yeah. Those are really two really good Scotty Bowman stories, Rich. You got stories for
Scotty
days,
Bowman.
Man.
I guess if my favorite memory of the Joe right. would be hanging out with Scotty Bowman. I people always thought he was standoffish
right.
and kind of a they didn't think he was necessarily a nice guy. But Brendan Shanahan, I read this in a Sports Illustrated profile of Bowman, uh-huh. says if Scotty walks right by and doesn't say a word, don't give it a second thought. It's not about you. It's just that he, Scotty, is thinking about hockey. And that's how I found him to be. And I really enjoyed that relationship. So that would be my fondest Joe Louis memory.
Absolutely love that. Rich, unfortunately, we only got 30 seconds left. We have to bid you adieu, my friend. But we want to have you on next week to really put in perspective this last year at the Joe for the Detroit Red Wings, going out with a whiff and not making a postseason appearance. So would you come back with us next week?
Love to, Al. You know that.
Richard Kincaid, the great Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. Rich, thanks so much. We'll see you next week, my friend. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks so much.
All right, folks. And again, you know, we played that snippet to begin the show. That Game 7 victory at Olympia on April 14th, 1955. Well, fast forward to that snippet you heard to start the year. To start the season back in 1997, June 7th, 1997, where the Wings won its first Stanley Cup since 1955. Stevie Y, what an atmosphere it was. And again, we all say goodbye to Joe Louis Arena this Sunday as the Wings host the New Jersey Devils. Well, that's it, folks. We'll see you same time, same place on Monday. Have a great weekend and be easy, people.